Okay.
If I have not met you before, my name is Rabbi Blass. It's so nice to see so many old faces, people who've been here before, people that I've had the tremendous force of interacting with in different places and different venues, and also many of the new students as well. It should be an amazing zman of growth, self-discovery, dealing with challenges, rising to challenges. Higher? Okay. I'm very shy in general, so I need a more microphone. One of the areas of working in YU and Stern that I think we all feel a lot of pride in is that when I first came to YU personally, and myself and Dr. Muscat are the same age, which if you're wondering what that is 32. So when we first came to YU and Stern, there really wasn't such a concept of having like a cadre of mashgichim or mashgichot or people like Mrs. Cement and others, and there was no counseling center, there was no anything. So anybody that was feeling the weight of any issue, small issues, big issues, and no issue really is small if it's something that a person is feeling the weight of, there's just really nowhere to go with that. You'd have to, you know, hopefully find a person outside of school, then have to speak to your parents about supporting that, and it just often did not happen. And one of the great things over the last 15 years is to have counseling centers both in YU and Stern. Now, let me just make a mention for a second. Dr. Muscat, I believe you would, no? Did I say something wrong? No, okay. Let's make a mention for a second of which people are candidates to go to someone at the counseling center, because I so often speak to guys in YU and they're like, counseling center, you know, a psychologist, a social worker, you know, rabbi, are you saying there's something wrong with me? Or so my answer always is that any normal, healthy person in this world should see, I wouldn't even say the word help, but support at some point in life. Life is super, super complicated. It's often hard to navigate that by oneself. It's often hard to speak to friends and family about certain issues. And there should be absolutely no shame. And I'm sure none of you feel that there would be, but just in case you feel that there's some issue, absolutely no shame in going to the counseling center, reaching out to people like Mrs. Cement, and certainly all of you should be comfortable ever reaching out to me if I can ever be of any assistance in any capacity. Anything else? That's it. Okay. So this is not going to be really a shiur. I didn't have a lot of time to make up source sheets and to go through tons of marmakomos, but Mrs. Cement suggested that we do something now during Elul, and I think it's such a great idea, and something that we started doing in YU the last few years, that deal with the issue of change, of Elul, of tshuva. Now, I want to be honest, the topic of tshuva to me, of change, is a deeply, deeply complicated topic. And I imagine that all of you are old enough in a way to understand a little bit of what I speak. Because there's a fundamental conflict when we speak about change. Now, the first conflict, which isn't so much a conflict, but is there a feeling as a Jew, and we always speak about the value of tshuva, of self-development, of return to self, of ever a person feeling that, you know what, like I'm always inadequate. You know, I'm always sort of being pushed to do more, and I'm hearing this Musar Shmuz, and this about learning more, and all those things are great, and doing more chesed, and more tshuva, and all that is important, but at the same time, the ability sometimes to sort of be okay with ourselves as is, without sort of the feeling of, I always have to be working on something and pushing myself in every second of the day. And there's a certain conundrum, there's a certain balance between living in a community such as ours with constant aspirations for self-development, and at the same time being able to be at peace with ourselves, with all of our brokenness and all of our inadequacies and all the things about ourselves. That's certainly conundrum number one. And conundrum number two is, anybody here, and this is such an intelligent audience, usually if I want an answer, question answered. I'll call on Shoshirs or someone of her elk. What do the Gemaras say about the greatness of tshuva, the value of tshuva? Anybody want to sort of fill in the blank? Tshuva is what? These are some of the Gemaras that appear at the end of Maseches Yoma and other places. That tshuva is so great, tshuva is so exceptional, that it's maga'as l'kisei hakavod. It extends all the way up to the celestial chambers. It brings a refuah to the world. It brings a yeshua to the world. Tshuva has all these capabilities. There's a great piece by Rav Huttner. I was mentioned in Mar Makom. It's in Yom Kippurim. It's the eighth simin, where Rav Huttner speaks about the fact that a person who does tshuva, it's like an act of recreation of the world. Every time a person goes through a process of self-redemption and return to self, it's like a maisa bereishis every time. And we go into Rosh Hashanah, we go into Yom Kippur. I'll just maybe speak just personally. I went on a program, which I'm sure many of you have been on before, called Jolt. Have you ever been on Jolt before? So Jolt had a very big impact on my life personally when I was 17 years old, 30 years ago in 1989. Just to be clear, Dr. Musk and myself are not 32 years old. We are not, Dr. Musk has 32, I'm 47, But, okay. And just sort of came to shul that year as a senior in high school, living in Baltimore, Maryland, Shem Yamunah, with this sense, even though I didn't know the Gemaras, of tshuva and self-rectification, self-finding. And then, you sit there and you're davening like, a two-hour Shemon Esrei somewhere in the corner of your shul or wherever a person is. And then all of a sudden, a day later, a week later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, we find that despite all of our best intentions and with all of our inspiration and all of our sincerity and all of our everything, we find ourselves sometimes almost incapable of change. And we sort of say, well, same old blank, and I had made promises about X, but I still find myself unable to fulfill those promises. And all of that stuff, is that familiar? All that feeling of a strong desire to change, a recognition of the necessity of change, but then also sort of living with maybe the slightly depressing feeling that I really maybe can't change so much, or I'm sort of like stuck a little bit in who I am, for better or for worse. And that's a conundrum, because we're driven by great thoughts and great feelings to do tshuva. But how do we navigate and how do we manage all of that when we then find ourselves perhaps a little bit stuck in behavior? And if that's true at maybe age 17, 18, 20, 22, how much more so when a person is 50 years old and it's already been like, 30, 35 years of attempting to change and just sort of, I sort of am who I am and almost like giving up a little bit on that change. So I wanted to spend, a few minutes. We don't have a lot of time. We have about a half an hour or so. I just want to make four different ha'aros, four different either points, observations, insights, things that I were thinking about. Certainly nothing that's in any way groundbreaking, but just sort of reflections on either the complexity of or on the journey of change. Now, one ha'ara is something that I think is really critical and something that probably for a lot of people here, they're not affected by. But probably for a lot of people, something that stays with them. And that is the following question. Anybody here want to tell me a source that speaks about the value of shame or embarrassment, especially when it comes to tshuva? And I'll even ask you this question. Should a person feel shame and embarrassment when they think about their own behavior? Should that even be part of the equation? Okay, so Shoshi points out the idea of charata. Now, charata is a little bit different than shame. Charata, of course, means like regret, and the two might be similar, but there might be like a different connotation as well. They're probably in the same family, you would say, regret and shame. But regret, to me, anybody, what's the difference that any of you sort of, if you feel there is a difference between regret and shame, anybody have like a distinction? So I think to me at least, regret feels maybe more gentle on oneself. You know, I regret doing X, Y, and Z. Shame feels like it enters into like the psychic cavity of a person in a way that is often much more painful, much more paralyzing, much more isolating in a lot of ways. So the answer to the question of, let's say, and for me, the Rambam's Hilchos Teshuva, it's like having like another member in the family. It's like who doesn't talk back to you at the same time. You know, it's like this living, breathing entity that every year, I'm sort of constantly going back to it and just almost like refining more and more meaning in it. So the Rambam has a certain interesting conundrum, so to speak. Because the Rambam says at the very beginning of Hilchos Teshuva, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam says, how does a person do vidoy? How does a person admit their sins? What is the nature of that? So Ana Hashem, what's the next word? This is what we say in the Yom Kippur davening. Chatasi, Avisi, Pashati, Lefanecha. And then he adds in, Uboshti, Vinichamti. I'm embarrassed about the sins that I did, and I also regret those sins. And I just want to point out that the reason that this Rambam is a Chiddush is because the Gemara that the Rambam quotes does not use the word Boshti, or Nichamti for that matter. It just says, if I want to do vidui, I say, Ana Hashem, please God, Chatasi, Avisi, Pashati, etc., and that's it. The Rambam, on his own, adds in this concept of Uboshti, and I'm fundamentally ashamed of my behavior. That's the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Teshuva. But the person continues a foray for the rest of the Rambam, and I hope this point is not too obscure. There's a Rambam in Perek Beis Halacha Beis, where the Rambam says, how does a person do Teshuva? That a person does the following. Anybody know the four steps of Teshuva? So the Rambam says, number one is that you have to have, everybody remember? So he has to do Azivas Achet. I'll just even read to you the Rambam. The Rambam says, Umahi Atshuva, this is the Perek Beis Halacha Beis, Hu She'ya'azov HaChote Cheto. A person changes his behavior, that's number one. V'yisiro Imachshvaso, which is really difficult to do. I remove sort of the temptations or the thoughts from my brain. V'yigmur belibo shelo yaasehu od. And I also say, I'm not going to do it again in the future. So there's three stages. Stop the behavior, stop obsessing about the behavior, and make a commitment to not do the behavior in the future. Okay? And then he says, v'chein yisnachem al sha'avar. And you know what? You should also have charata. Four different stages. Stop the behavior, stop obsessing about the behavior, commit to the future, and regret what you do. Now, what does the Rambam not say in this halacha? And trust me when I tell you that this is the end of the halacha. He doesn't say anything that part of tshuva is to be embarrassed about past behavior. He just says you should have regret, which I think, as mentioned before, probably is something a little bit different. And there's another chiddush about this Rambam as well. Anybody know? I imagine most people do not know this. Even some of the past questions that people knew the answer but just didn't feel like blurting it out. But this is the part that people don't know. Anybody know the difference of this Rambam's four parts of Tshuva versus the Meiri and Rabbeinu Yonah? So listen again to what the Rambam says. Stop doing the behavior. Try to stop obsessing about the behavior. Commit to the future. And then v'chein yisnachem. And also you should have some charata. You should have some regret about the behavior as well. Anybody know a different formulation or a different way of approaching the same issue? So that is what's discussed by the Meiri, where the Meiri says that the first thing is charata. What has to drive the tshuva is the regret. the bad feelings, the sort of beating up on ourselves a little bit. And the Rambam does not say. The Rambam says, you know what, and you should also, b'chein, you know what, the real thing is changing the behavior, but you should also be regretful about it. So you know what's interesting, the Rambam, he mentions busha when it comes to vidoy, doesn't mention it when it comes to tshuva, and includes charata only almost as like an afterthought, as opposed to the other Rishonim. So everyone here, like, that's like a little bit of a dialectic in a way. And I think what a person can say, and I believe that if you think about your own lives, you can hopefully connect with this. If I ask you, is there a value of feeling shame, embarrassment, severe remorse, feeling, I guess, shameful about one's behavior, is there a value in that theoretical concept? Like, what would you say? Yeah.
Because
you're always so positive about everything. For you, there's not. But, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead. Right. So, right. So I would say is the following, and I think you're right, but I would just add, I think there is a value in feeling shame, because shame is the barometer of our own sort of ethical, spiritual core, in a way. Like, the response of shame is almost our way of telling us that maybe we've drifted away from a certain value, we've acted in a way that's inappropriate, we've removed ourselves from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shame is like our body's way of almost giving some type of reaction. It's almost like, you know, like a natural sort of spiritual reaction. I think that's really important. And I think that's what the Rambam means. So when you have vidoy, yeah, you should acknowledge that there's a shameful aspect to it. But what's also true is that actual change and meaningful behavior in life can't be driven by shame. Maybe it can't even be driven by regret. Because those are sort of negative, almost toxic, destructive forces that leads to shame and then more shame, isolation, self-loathing, self-criticalness, in ways that just sort of drag us away from like the spirit of the light, so to speak. In fact, I saw recently a Sforno, when Kadosh Baruch Hu asked Kayin that how come you fell? So the Sforno says, you shouldn't beat up yourself, that's not a great sentence. You shouldn't beat yourself up about past behavior. If you can fix it, so just fix it. Right? Don't sit there ruminating, and if I did that, and maybe 3 years ago I did this, and then, you know, I told myself I was going to daven two times a day, three times a day, and I didn't do it, and I said I was going to do that, and I didn't do that. I mean, just, you know, we sit there just in this cycle of shame, rumination, regret, you know, self-laceration, whatever, and that can't be part of a healthy model of tshuva and repentance. Is it necessary a little bit, part of vidui, to push us forward? Yes. But that can't be the essence of our lives. And if any of you, or me, or anyone, is feeling sort of the weightiness of regret, shame, over-rumination that we get trapped in, that's not healthy, and something that should be, in a very gentle way, addressed. Okay, a second point. I may have, before I move on, and I find my notes, any questions or thoughts on what I said? Okay. Another area that I always used to feel confused about, and if I ask you this question, I bet there'll be confusion about it as well. The best questions to ask as like a shul rav is the questions that there's like no answer to, and you can just confound the people that you're speaking to. But I want to ask you the following question, and again, I'm looking around the room. It's a very educated group. If I ask you, is the paradigm of tshuva that of transformative change, passionate change, something that takes place almost with a sense of like an epiphany, okay? Or is the essence of change something that is a lifelong journey? Which one would you say? The first, epiphany, transformation, tshuva is about being able to say that I'm an ish acher, I'm like a totally different person. Or is it something, you know, much more gradual, much more lifelong? Okay, so just by a show of hands, who says the essence of tshuva is transformative, you know, and just to sort of be able to say I'm a different person after Elul and Aseres Mitzvah? Who votes for number one? Okay, and who votes for number two, that it's a long journey? So I'll also vote for number two. That's why it's confusion, because let me ask you a question. Who would you say is held up in the entire Chazal and in Tanakh as a model of tshuva? If I ask you, like, identify or throw out a name of a person that we think about when we say, oh, this was sort of the ultimate chozer b'tshuva. Yeah, please. So David HaMelech. And David HaMelech, he's like a super complicated person, I think you would say. I think that's one of the reasons that, I'm sure, me and some of you loved David HaMelech, because he's such like a real person, you know, and so much like realness and just beauty and also humanity and you know, all of that. But the model we think about, which I imagine that you're thinking about by David HaMelech, is his statement of Chatasi L'Hashem, right? It was like short, it was like concrete. He was called out on his behavior, and he said, yes, completely, I completely admit to it. Perhaps a model from the Gemara is Rav Elazar ben Dudai. Ever remember the Gemara Rav Elazar ben Dudai? Rav Elazar ben Dudai was a famous, you know, it's sort of even like an uncomfortable Gemara to speak about, but he was a famous Avarion. He was involved in like the lowest of the lowest possible deeds. And then in the middle of those, of the lowest of deeds, the person he was with made a certain type of comment. And then in a moment, he said, you know what, I sort of seen the light, so to speak. He died on the spot after having that moment. And then there's a baskel that says, Yesh kono lomo b'sha'achas. They're people that achieve sort of salvation in a moment. And there's so many stories that are that way. And again, going back to the Rambam's Sefer Teshuvah, the Rambam speaks about the fact that a person can say, everybody know the language, that I'm so changed that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can come and testify that I'll never go back to those sins ever again. Now, that's a very dramatic statement. That sounds like the goal is for a person to feel, I have so completely changed that this is like the totally new me. And the Rambam goes on and on in that vein, in that kivud. I'm an ish acher, I'm not the same person. Again, in a very dramatic fashion that makes a person feel that the ideal change is somewhat quick. But there's so many other statements that don't support that. And that supports sort of like a slow, gradual process of growth, which I think all of you raised your hands, probably A, because you felt that that's a lot more meaningful. And also, it's a lot more what? It's a lot more, what do you say? Slow, gradual change in life is a lot more meaningful, and it's also a lot more wise. What do you say in the gray shirt? So it's if you said the word wise, that's true. It's a lot more. It's a much greater chance of something being effective. You know, a slow change. I think all of you probably, you know sort of all the even like discussions in the literature about the best way of dieting, the best way of exercising, the best way of anything in life. And all these things that promise X typically is far more destructive than even positive. Anything that promises quick change. I used to, when I was young, I'd be so enamored of like when guys would come back from yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and you know, I knew this guy from a year ago or 2 years ago, and you know, smoking like a cigarette on Yom Kippur while driving a car, and then, you know, you see him a year and a half later, and he's like, you know, tzitzis, like, down to the floor, and, you know, like, 2 hours from an esrei, I'd be like, oh, it's so amazing, you know. But there's something amazing about it, but it's only something which might not be totally, totally healthy or wise for a person. So how do we balance those two things, sort of the value of radical change versus the value of lifelong change? And the truth is that I don't think it's a contradiction at all. I think what the goal should be on Yom Kippur, what the goal should be on Elul, the goal should be in life, the goal should be whenever a person thinks about what I have to do in my life, I think the feeling should be one of absolute passion, sincerity, saying that, you know what, I genuinely want to feel like a different person. I'm not maybe totally happy with certain aspects of my life. It should come with like a depth of yearning. Right? Everyone know, by the way, that we have 100 kolos in Rosh Hashanah because of the mother of Sisera, who cried sort of tears of joy when she thought that her son Sisera was successful in what he was doing and maybe killed in battle, etc. And maybe the reason that we have this model of the Ein Sisera is to tell you there's almost like a value in that. There's a value in the maybe intense emotion of the moment of epiphany. And there's something very beautiful about that. There's something very beautiful about, again, the guy in Yeshiva, Torah Tribe, or Reshit, or wherever he is, who maybe like one night, late at night, wakes up and says, you know what, like, maybe I want a different direction in life. And maybe I'm going to like stay up all night and just, you know, learn something in the back of the Ace Medrash. And there's a beauty in that sort of passion of like, wow, there are things in my life that I really want to accomplish. There's maybe a gulf between myself and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and I want to feel driven by that. And at the same time, to be wise enough to realize that while that passion and that she'ifa, that impulse, is something that is absolutely precious, actual change needs to come with chachma and with seichel and with patience and thoughtfulness and wisdom, and to sort of protect both of those things. Protect the spirit of passion, the spirit of that impulse, and at the same time to be able to say, you know what, I'm 20 years old, or 45 years old, and my goal is that over the course of the next 70 years, this is the person that I want to become. And I want to be able to, not to sound morbid, but lie on my deathbed and say, you know what, I have really fundamentally changed and grown and evolved in all these ways, and I have my life to sort of be able to navigate that and to figure that out. And I think both of those things are super, super important. I just want to mention, we just have about 15 minutes left or 10 minutes left. I want to read to you, if you don't mind, a language of Rav Tzadok. Those of you who've come to other shiurim before, they know that a big fan of Rav Tzadok. So Rav Tzadok says the very first piece in Tzidkos HaTzadik. So Tzidkos HaTzadik Os Aleph. He says, Reishis Kenisas HaAdam La'avodas Hashem. When a person first enters into the realm of Avodas Hashem, Tzarech Liyos B'Chipazon. A person has to do so quickly, like stealthily. I want to go ahead, I want to take upon myself this mitzvah, or this obligation, or this, or a new seder, b'chipazon. Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and do it. Kamosha matzidu b'pesach mitzrayim, like in the very first times of geula, b'pesach mitzrayim, shayonecha b'chipazon, they ate the matzah quickly, right, v'lo pesach doros. But that was not true by the next year, the next year, the next year. So why at the beginning does a person have to almost move quickly? To remove ourselves from a past behavior pattern. And again, I'll just use the example of myself, most people my age, when it comes to losing weight. You get into bad habits and awful habits, and you're eating this, and you're drinking too much Dr. Pepper, and you're all the various things that people do. If you want to be menatek, you want to sort of distance yourself, break yourself off from that, so then you don't do so in a mild fashion, right? You don't do so in a balanced fashion. You say, you know what? Tomorrow morning, 4:30 in the morning, I'm getting up and I'm putting on my, I was about to say the word Walkman, which you probably don't know what that is. I'll get my, whatever it is, and I'm going to go running out. I'm going to go sprinting down the block, because that is sort of the first initiative and change that needs to come with the transformative passion, that epiphany, and again, to protect both of those things in your lives, to have that element of a desire for radical change, those passions, but at the same time to do so with Chachma. I want to mention a third and a fourth point, and again, encourage everyone to reach out to me privately if you want to continue this discussion at other times. It's very, very deceiving. Anybody know in the Rambam's fifth parak in Hilchos Teshuvah and the sixth parak what he talks about in those two prakim? Two very famous prakim that you've probably seen before in some capacity. The Rambam begins parakei and he says, Rishos l'chol adam, every person has the rishos. What do you think the Rambam means by rishos? Every person has how do you even sort of define that word? Every person has the capability, is what the Rambam means, to change in whatever way a person wants to change. Nobody is there telling you, says the Rambam, that if you want to be a Chacham or you want to be a Tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, you can be that. If you want to be like a Rasha, like Yeravam, you can be that. If you want to be a Chacham, if you want to be a fool, if you want to be this, is there anything you want to be in life? It's like a real, old-time, Nike ads almost. Nothing should hold you back, and anything you want to be in life, there's nothing that is an impediment to that. Now, anybody having a thought or an issue on that Rambam? Even maybe internally from other places of the Rambam Sefer. If I ask you, do you have full bechira of everything in your life? Who here would say yes? Who here would say no? Who here is not really sure? And maybe yes and maybe no. Okay, so there you go. I like all these answers. The Rambam seems to say you have absolute bechira, but in other places, let's say at the beginning of Hilchos Deos, he says that every person is born with a certain nature, right? You're born naturally as a Rachman. You're born naturally as a Kasan, someone who gets angry. You're born naturally as this. And to change that nature requires a tremendous amount of work. If you're born like a certain type of person, and you have a certain type of nature, is it true that we have total freedom to act however we want to act when we have to fight against sort of that nature? So, for the Rambam, that's very complicated. But Rav Yosef Albo, what's Sefer Rav Yosef Albo, right? One of the great Svarim in Jewish philosophy called Sefer HaYikarim, I'm sure Sefer that maybe you've seen before. He says, you know what, there are three different types of decisions that we have in life. It's three different types of behaviors. He said there are certain types of behaviors we have full bechira over. I have full bechira, maybe you have full bechira, whether I'm going to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning or not. And most people here probably say, yeah, I have that bechira, I have that choice. If I want to get up at 8 or if I want to sleep until 2, I have that choice. And he said there are certain things that you have absolutely no bechira about. Your nature, your background, your history, your circle of life, all those things that you're in, you have absolutely no bechira about certain behaviors that you do or don't do. Anybody have an example, perhaps? I know this is a personal question. Of a behavior that you can think about that a person has absolutely no bechira over, no choice of whether they do or do not do something. It's a good question, and maybe something to think about. And then he says there's a whole middle category of behaviors that sort of we have no choice about and we sort of do have a choice about. And probably, as a lot of you said, it's probably a lot of our behaviors, a lot of things that we're just forced to do by nature, by circumstance, but we also might have some bechira in there as well. And this is a very complicated topic. But who discusses this in a somewhat different type of way? Maybe even a more famous way than Yosef Albo? So, of course, Reb Dessler, in the Michtam Eliyahu, in probably his most famous piece in the entire Sefer, called the Kuntres of Bechira. And he discusses that Bechira is limited. You know, if any of you here are football fans, or at least I would hope know what a football field looks like, Bechira is very limited. We have no choice about the 50 yards behind us. We have no choice about something that is 50 yards ahead of us. We have a teeny little sliver of areas of genuine bechira in our life. And if you think about it in your own life, that's probably pretty limited. Things that are not behind you, namely things that you just do because you do it, you're not even thinking about it. Things that are not too far ahead of you, that are just totally off of the grid of of what I can do in my life. But there's a bechira, will I call my mother before Shabbos and speak gently to her, wish her good Shabbos, or call my grandmother, or will I do this, or will I can I get to daven a few minutes earlier? I mean, there's sort of like a small bechira sliver for a person. Now, why do I say that? I say it because I think it's really important when a person decides they want to change to make sure that it's something that at this juncture in a person's life they can change and that they're able to change. And it's very much biyadeinu to go ahead and say, yeah, you know what, I really can work on this and I should feel maybe a slight amount of shame because I haven't done it and I'm driven to do it for the right reasons. And that's an area that I feel that I want to grow in. Now, if we establish those reasonable expectations for ourselves, so hopefully those are areas that we can succeed in or maybe fail in. But if what we feel sort of standing during maybe Elul or Yom Kippur or whenever, sort of, I need to change, and we go through every single al-chayt and we identify seven different points in every single al-chayt and we make a list of 120 things that, you know, we want different in our lives, all we do is create what I mentioned before, of the shame and the frustration and feeling as though we can never change. And I think that's a really, really critical point to figure out what we can and what we can't change in our lives. Now, just one last thing, okay, is the following. Now, this is a very complicated topic. A very complicated topic. It's something that probably like most of these things that I mentioned are not one-year topics. These is lifelong topics. How to have meaningful life change over many years, how to realize and recognize what we do and don't have control over, how to live lives where we're driven slightly by regret, but mostly we want to change because of the values that brings to our life. These are not things that people change overnight. The last piece is a recognition of the following. Let's say a person has an issue with temper. And they say, I want to change my temper. I get angry too easily. I'm yelling at my this. I'm yelling at, I don't know why mothers always get the brunt of things, but my siblings or family, or I have an issue with gaiva that I feel that I'm sort of too conceited. I have an issue with insecurity, which then leads to other types of behavior. I have an issue with a lack of confidence. I have an issue with maybe not telling the truth all the time, whatever the list of issues that we have. And I think it's really important to be able to understand that change can come about in two very different types of tahalichim, two very different types of models of change, and each one is significant. The first is the recognition of sort of the outer change. What do I mean by outer change? Person has an issue with the temper. Baruch Bar Leibowitz supposedly had a very bad temper with his kids. So what did he do? He had like an angry coat in the closet. And when he was about to feel really angry, he would say, oh, you know, I have to go get the angry coat. And he would go into his closet and he would put on the angry coat. And he would put on his gartel and he would do it up. And by the time he had this coat on, he realized, like, what a jerk. What am I doing yelling at my kids? So he did all of these like things in his life to help him stay away from anger. And if any of you have an issue with anger here, so you all know there's lots of things that a person can do. Deep breathing, to walk out of the house, to count to 20, to make a decision to not say something until the next day. There's all sorts of ways of changing sort of externally, outward, inward. Right? Everyone understand that? Okay? And that's maybe why the Rambam begins Hilchos Shuvah V'Vidui. The first way of changing is not by going through the whole internal process, but it's by saying, I did this, and I did that, and I want to change that. Very, very external. Okay? And then on a far more cosmic level, on a far more fundamental sort of psychic level in a person, there is a far deeper question as to what is the inner landscape of my life that is not at peace, that is not miyushav, that is not settled, that's leading me to need to respond in a certain type of way. That's leading me to need to seek out too much recognition from other people. That's leading me towards jumping in anger at someone. That's leading me towards what's the inner landscape that really needs addressing. Wherever that comes from, whatever it is that brings a person to that, whatever the pieces in our life are that perhaps sort of need addressing. And both of those things are like parallel tracks. You have to say, you know what, this is what I'm going to do almost externally, behaviorally, but I also recognize that there's certain outer behaviors. Maybe it means that I need to do some real like inner work on myself to come to a greater level of, to me, what are the most two important words in life. Everybody know what those two words are? Peace and acceptance. Peace and acceptance. If you're at peace, you have acceptance about your life, of who you are, of your life circumstances, so that you can have genuine love and genuine growth and genuine closeness with the Kosh Baruch Hu. But as long as the inner world is filled with like static of sorts, then we may keep it in for a while, but it's going to manifest itself in all sorts of ways in the world. So those are the areas, just to mention, of course, the two different ways of approaching change. Also the necessity of sort of the momentary passion, but also long-term change as well. The value of having some level of busha, but that can't be the driving force behind change. And a number of other things as well. Just want to mention that all of you should take a moment while you're going through the process of tshuva to be able to look at yourselves and say, you know what, I'm pretty good. I've grown a lot. I've gone through a lot. I'm a good person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me. God loves me. I have wonderful friends. All the things in the world. And say, you know what? Can I work on myself? Absolutely, I can work on myself. But that should come from a place of generosity, of self-love, of gentleness, of caring for ourselves. And by doing that, we continue to truly, truly work on ourselves, but in a healthy spirit and in a loving spirit. I want you to have a great day, and thanks for being here.
How are you? Good to see you.